Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you all for making it.
We're going to be the number one media conglomerate in the world.
The key here is act like a happy family. We're the Osbournes, and I'm Daddy fucking Warbucks, okay?
I always wanted one of you kids to take over.
People would do well to remember there's going to be a new sheriff in town.
Here's to us.
Hello and welcome back to Still Watching Succession, an unofficial podcast about the HBO series Succession. I'm senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Vanity Fair chief critic Richard Lawson.
So each week, if you are just joining us, each week we are discussing the latest episode of Succession. This week we will be discussing episode 3, Hunting. We are trying something new this week. We're going to do a little bit of a countdown this week of our top players to see sort of where they're sitting in the succession struggle. Richard, I'm really excited about number one. Number one made for a very, very fun and exciting week. I believe the word he used was fruity. Very fruity.
Yeah, exactly. Our number one is obviously Logan for this week because it was his show. Yes. He had people oinking like pigs and was throwing sausages at people. And it was quite a towering thing for the character, but also for Brian Cox, the actor. He just really took that full tilt and carried that whole episode. It was fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. He just chewed it all up. Right. Mm-hmm. I think I've talked about this before, but I always think of the characters on these shows as lions, and him particularly as like an old lion, with a lot of roar still in him. And it's interesting that the episode starts with this medical checkup, right? Of this doctor being like, so I hear you still have stiffness. I hear you're like not doing super well. And, you know, that kind of thing, whether intentional or not, is something that Logan would see as a challenge of his virility. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that coupled with a number of other things would be a reason for him to act out the way that he acts out in this episode, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this episode did a really good job of highlighting the sort of, I guess, the crassness of Logan and therefore sort of his whole empire. Like, I think that there's a careful distinction made about Pierce, about this other news company, and the way that he speaks about the family that owns that company. And he seems to have a kind of chip on his shoulder about their, you know, maybe their sort of older money, snooty sort of thing. So I think this episode was kind of about that dynamic of like when someone is that rich and that powerful and yet still has this fear of seeming weak, you know, in the eyes of people who for whatever reason, seem a little bit like holier than.
So the main plot of this episode is about how Logan wants to take over, for PGN, which is the Pierce family's media conglomerate. The Pierce family, I believe, is meant to be based loosely on the Sulzberger family, which has owned the New York Times for generations, but they're this sort of like liberal conglomerate. Basically, you're supposed to think of what if Fox News took over the New York Times. That's what you're supposed to have in mind. And this episode is all about, Logan trying to cement support, bring everyone in line. He brings Frank back in because of Frank's, sort of appeal to the Pierces, and they go on this hunting trip to Hungary to sort of get the whole team together.
Yeah. Yeah. I gotta say, the production design on this whole horror Hungarian retreat was like so well done. That dinner where they were eating dinner in the dining room, there was, you know, it had this, these dark tones to it, and it really felt like, Logan was like mounting, you know, some sort of sneaky Shakespearean attack, you know, like killing Banquo or something.
Right.
You know? It was like really, I think it was just like very well articulated, by the production team.
Yeah. Like when they walk into that foyer first in this estate, and even Logan's like, mon Dieu, like, you know, just sort of like, it's so gothic and over the top and everything. And this boar hunt, that they're on. And, I love the visual of the boar hunt being like basically like a trout run. You know what I mean? Like it's not, I mean, maybe that's how boar hunting is done. I personally have never been on a boar hunt. I don't know about you, Richard.
I certainly have not.
But, you know, it makes sense that you would be want to be out of the way of the tusks, right? But doesn't that just seem, I think Tom comments on it, it seems very unsportsmanlike the way that they do it in this episode, where it's just like,
oh, it's literally just like shooting. Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, there's no sport
to
it. Yeah,
pigs in a barrel sort of thing. So, but then we get like the real hunting of the episode, is what happens in this dining room, as starting with his bullying of, the character of Ray, who just wants to go to the bathroom, and leading towards him putting, Greg and Tom and, Carl on the floor in this game he's devised, Boar on the Floor, that somehow, like, it's just, it's an insane thing to, it feels like a surreal, like Danish film. Like, I don't know what he would like.
Yeah. Like, what's that movie? Sallow.
Yeah.
Like that, like horrible Italian thing. Yeah. It just felt very like Von Trier. Like, yes. It felt very, almost to the point of like over the top. Like, it was almost too absurdist. But, you know, I think the combination of them having just been on this, like, hunt, and they're in this old castle, and there's booze and everything, like, I was like, well, I could maybe, if I squint, like, kind of see that actually happening.
I have to imagine, since so much of Succession is based on, like, real stories of rich people behaving badly, that someone has, like, whispered a story of this nature to Jesse Armstrong, right, who runs the show. Like, I feel like this has to have happened somewhere. And I think they had to carefully pick who they would put on the floor in order to make it, you know, like, I don't think we would have bought it if it were, like, certainly not Jerry or Sid or any of them, but, like, or Kendall or Roy or Roman, but, like, Tom and Greg and I guess Carl. Like, sure. Yeah.
Yep, totally. Yeah. Well, I think probably because he knew they would do it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The other thing that happens in that scene that I really like is him, roaring, about the price of a gallon of milk, which, you know, is meant to indicate, we've talked about this before, you talk about the chip on his shoulder, he's got several chips on his shoulder, but one of his, like, sources of frustration, I think, is this idea that the children that he's raised or the people that he worked for him have no idea what it's like to be a real, you know, working class person in the world. And, like, as much as he likes his excesses, he also takes this, like, smug superiority in, like, I built this myself, and you soft assholes, like, know nothing of the real world, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, like, I wonder if part of the reason why he is thus far favoring Shiv to be his successor is because she has at least worked outside of the family.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Like, as a political consultant kind of person. So, like, maybe there's a little bit of respect for that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. And also, like the reason he's interested, I think, is because she's the least under his thumb in that way, you know?
Right.
I mean, mm-hmm. Connor, I guess, is also the least under his thumb, but like he's not interested at all in Connor. So, you know, so we can hop over to Shiv in a second, who is like number two on our ranking, by the way, of Roy's, but, of powerful Roy's. But is there anything else you want to say about like Logan specifically, in this episode?
I guess like I'm really intrigued by the moments where in like Brian Cox's characterization and in the writing where we see a little softness where he's like, oh, I'm kidding or whatever, you know, like, and I'm intrigued whether the show thinks he's a sociopath. Do you know what I mean? I was listening to an episode of the Ron Burgundy podcast that Will Ferrell does.
Uh-huh.
I ran out of things to listen to in Fire Island, so I was getting desperate. And, Ron interviewed this, you know, kind of, I think, forensic psychiatrist who testifies at trials. And, you know, he was talking about how there are a lot of people with, you know, antipersonal social disorder, whatever, you know, what the kind of like clinical term for sociopathy. And, he was like, there are a lot of them in Fortune 500 companies. And so I don't know. This episode made me curious if like the show really does think that he is this completely, you know, completely moralist person.
Yeah. The other question, and this is, I think, much more of a question in season one, though season opening with this medical examination, I think, calls into question this episode, is like, how much of any of this is dementia? You know what I mean? There's not a mm-hmm. lot of sense from the people in that room, like who've worked with him for a long time, like Jerry or Frank, that this is tremendously new or erratic behavior, the way that like peeing on Kendall's office floor in season one was like demonstrably erratic behavior. So like this might be kind of par for the course for Logan, but there's also just that question of like, you know, are all of his faculties intact? Would he do right. something like this? If, you know, there, you know, I don't pretend to have any sort of clinical understanding of dementia. I did live like through, you know, a grandparent having it, and there was a good deal of, anger.
Mm-hmm.
That goes with it because of this, it's understandable. It's like it's a frustration and a fear tied to like a loss of control, you know, and I could definitely see that manifesting in Logan just, you know, as extreme aggression from him. So, all right. So that is Logan, our number one Roy with a bullet.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You can earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Number two, Roy, is Shiv. Siobhan, she gets tasked, her sort of role in this episode is she's got a couple things. She's sent Tom to go try to kill this Pierce deal on her behalf. And then she's also been tasked by her father. She wants to go to Hungary. He's like, no. He wants her to go get Connor under control because Connor has made this video announcing his declaration for presidency, his desire not to pay tax, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, he's playing chicken with the IRS.
Right. So Shiv is on Connor patrol. She has sent you know, Tom to go, you know, be her deputy in Hungary. And then she's trying to get at Connor through Willa. And then she winds up, sleeping with an actor that Willa knows. And then at the end, she has this conversation with Tom. And at the very end, you know, Logan's like, it's time to bring you in. right? Mm-hmm. Which is everything she's wanted. So we feel like this is Shiv ascendant in this episode.
Yeah, big time. And I think that this episode was great at showing how she works, you know, like,
yeah,
because obviously everyone has an angle here and there's different strategies, you know. Roman is sort of sniveling and mean and petty. Kendall like tries to sort of take the high road, but also, you know, did the betrayal thing. So, but Shiv is a much quieter, smoother background player, you know, mm-hmm. and like, I just loved at the end her little smile and, you know, cause, her father is saying, you know, no one was with me, you know, I'm hearing it for all this about, you know, not wanting to do the Pierce deal or whatever. And she says, you didn't hear it from me. Basically saying like, but she had dispatched Tom to go kind of, you know, kill it. So I just think it was like a really clever, way of showing her process. And also I think that detailing the sort of mechanics of this, you know, one night stand with this actor guy was also a good sort of, I don't know, like allegorical way to kind of express, the way that she kind of traffics in betrayal, I guess, even though it's not technically a betrayal in their marriage. So yeah, I just thought it was a really interesting episode for her, and Sarah Snook as ever was wonderful.
Yeah. I particularly loved like her manipulation of Tom is ongoing. And we actually got a listener email about that, which I will post to you in a second. But I really liked the interaction with Willa, Connor's girlfriend, and how you see her trying to like work Connor from that angle. It's the same. Mm-hmm. It's the same exact play, you know, only with a different player, you know, different deputy, and trying to and just asking. She gets there so quickly, asking like three questions to get to a point where she's like, "It's in your best interest if Connor doesn't run for president, because it will suck up his resources that you want for your own theatrical career." Like that, she got there so fast. And, you know, Will is not entirely stupid and sort of sees where she's coming from, but it's still like interesting to watch Shiv play that way, you know?
Yeah. And I think that like, in a way, I think that Shiv sort of still thinks she's a nice person, whereas I feel like everyone else has completely divested themselves of that delusion, you know? And I think it would be kind of to the point where she would be shocked if someone were to suggest that she was kind of cruelly manipulating Connor's girlfriend, you know?
Right.
So I think, again, it's a really interesting characterization, because I think we were talking about it in the first episode of this season that, like, for some people, myself included, the tendency is to sort of see the moral stance, the decency, the compassion in a female character, you know? And I think that this show is continually sort of like illustrating that, no, she is of this family just as much as anyone else is.
We got an email from a listener, Martha. You can email us stillwatchingpod@gmail.com if you have questions, comments. We got a nice, pronunciation correction. Thank you guys so much for writing in, honestly, saving me. But, Martha writes, would be interested to learn how you understand Shiv's decision to marry Tom. Just doesn't make sense to me. And I feel like we definitely talked about this already, because I like sort of said something similar. And I thought your point was good in terms of like Shiv needs someone that she knows is on her side. Mm-hmm. And you know, because like it seems like Tom is her intellectual inferior, like her inferior in every way. So why would she want an inferior when she could have someone, you know, to match her? And you're saying she needs someone who's just like on her side, can, you know, make maneuvers for her. They talk about the team. But in this episode, I just think it's interesting to see like some, you know, we'll get to where Tom is on our ranking, but some of the limits of that team, and whether or not Shiv is going to blithely push the team to the breaking point, you know, push Tom too far. I could see her doing it without realizing it at all.
Yeah, I mean, she made the joke about, you know, the replicant and like, oh, my meat puppet's broken or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was clearly actually hurt by that.
Yeah.
And then she's like, kind of like her father, oh, I was just kidding, you know? And I think that there is certainly a limit to that, to, you know, even for someone as kind of craven and sniveling as Tom, like there is a point, a breaking point, I would think.
Yeah, But it's like, it's so funny because for someone who's like pretty good at playing things, Like she doesn't fully get there with Willow because Connor releases the video anyway. So like, you know, she didn't succeed in that task. No. But for someone who's like pretty good generally at playing the game, like it feels like she overestimates her ability to push Tom around, or she might do, you know?
Right. Like, I mean, again, like I think that she would be surprised if someone told her she was a mean person.
Right.
You know, exactly. And be sort of taken aback by it. And it's like, no, you are.
Yeah. All right. Our number three, Roy, he was already climbing last week. It's Kendall Roy. So as much, this is a really interesting thing to watch because as much as, Jeremy Strong, who plays, Kendall Roy, is still doing like the sort of zonked out, zombified version of him. Mm-hmm. He's still making incredible moves. Like in this episode, I didn't catch it the first time I watched it, but when I rewatched it, it's like when you watch that opening, you know, sort of Logan comes in, announces that they're going to go after Pierce. He walks out and then Kendall's like, oh, this could be a reputational and financial disaster. How is everyone feeling? And Roman's like, what are you doing? And like he gets everyone's honest reaction, and then they sort of see that he's like listening too closely or whatever, and then they all sort of lockstep and are like, no, we're into it, it's fine. But mm-hmm. then he has that information, and then later he's like, they're all against you, Dad. Like, they're all against you. And then, you know, similarly what he does with Roman, like when he comes and has this one-on-one with Roman, he offers up his belly a little to like talk about the biographer, which we'll get to probably in Greg's, storyline. But like he offers up his belly a little bit to Roman and at the same time pays acute attention when Roman gets on the phone and then has that information later when he grabs Roman's phone. And so like, you know, he's underestimate Kendall at your peril this season, I think is what we've learned.
Yeah, I mean, like, I, you're certainly seeing the resilience of his ruthlessness, you know, and his, will to power. You know, 'cause the thing about the failed takeover attempt at the end of last season was that, like, it almost worked. So, yeah. Like, you have to be very shrewd and good at calculating that kind of stuff to even get that close, you know? And so he's good at it. He's a natural. And I think now he's playing this angle where, By some turns, it could look like the sort of, you know, he's been put to heel, like you were saying, like kind of chastised kind of pet of his father now. But within that sort of public identity, I guess, there is latitude that, you know, there is a power to that, because it means you're close to him. It, you know, I think that Logan is basically just like, well, he's never going to fuck up again. He's never going to do that again. And it's like, you know, well, I wouldn't assume that maybe.
There was such an interesting posture, when, there's a point where Kendall is sort of like grilling Roman at dinner and, Logan is like standing behind him with mm-hmm. his arms on his shoulders. And it's just like such an interesting, like, positioning. I don't know. I was just like, really taken with it. I'm not even sure I fully understand what I feel like it means, but it's just sort of like, I will team up with whoever against whoever at any point. That's a Logan move, right? And at that moment, you know, it was him and Kendall against Roman, you know? And
I think it was a couple things. I think it was by from one angle, a sign of affection in a way, as much as he can express that.
Yeah.
I think also it may be sort of telegraphed to Roman, like, look what I did to your brother.
Right.
Look at this, like, broken down lackey.
Yeah.
Do you want to be this person? You know, right. Like, I think it was sort of, there was a gesture in that, like, where he was indicating to Roman, like, I've got this guy now, you know, basically beaten down and in my pocket. Like, do you want to be the next one?
Yeah. That's a great point. All right, which brings us to our number four, Roy, which is Connor Roy, who has soft declared himself in the presidential race. I think it's like in the intellectual race or something like that, sort of terminology. And I'm curious. I'm gonna lob out three things that I thought of when I saw Connor's video, and you tell me if I miss anything. I thought of the Kevin Spacey video for some reason. I thought of the Elizabeth Warren video, and I think that's because he was holding the beer bottle. I'm not sure how the timing lines up for that Elizabeth Warren sort of like announcement video that she did in her kitchen with a bottle of beer. And then I thought of there's the Mark Zuckerberg video that he also did in his kitchen, like near a toaster, talking about sort of like,
your knowledge of like celebrity kitchen videos. Impressive.
Well, I just remember them all, like all of them, even Elizabeth Warren, who's like, I love Liz, like I support Liz, but like that video didn't go over well. Elizabeth Warren, Kevin Spacey, that's like a known disaster, right? And then Mark Zuckerberg, he just seemed so animatronic. It was like, yeah, it was really bad. Are there any other celebrity kitchen videos or political kitchen videos that you can think of that we're evoking here?
My guess is that, yeah, they're trying to evoke at least two of those, in Warren and Zuckerberg. But yeah, I mean, I think it's tricky when you have a character like this and something like that video, where you want it to be funny, but it has to seem like it's something that someone would actually put out in real life. So I appreciated that they didn't make him too much of a buffoon. I mean, he like clearly is a complete idiot. And the idea that he, this like extraordinarily wealthy man who's never really worked, has some sort of righteous, you know, cause behind taxation, it's like absurd, of course. But I appreciated that they didn't make it too cartoony. I could see, you know, some scion of some big American family making something like that out here in the real world.
And that, I mean, that's why this is not a spoiler, because if it happens, I bet it happens in season 3, but like, I feel so certain that he's going to be president. Like, I feel so certain about this. Possibly.
The real world has broken your sense of political faith, Joanna. Well, yeah,
but I just feel like it has, like, everything he does has to look like kind of ridiculous to us, but then like, in retrospect, if he gets elected, it can't be like so ridiculous that we don't believe. Like you said, the real world has made it so that you'd have to push the needle like pretty far on that, but I don't know, it's fascinating. And maybe he'll win with Shiv as his campaign manager, because, you know, if things don't work out with the family business, that's what he's basically offered her, right? Like, come run my campaign. And she's like, hell no, but also I could see that happening as well. And Shiv just like winning the campaign for her brother. That just seems like a thing that the plot would have to bend to get to, but could get to, you know?
So, right. I mean, like, the thing is, we haven't really seen on the show yet how the video went over, you know?
Right.
Like, obviously, rich, well-educated people who, you know, are, I guess, have the luxury of irony, like, think it's stupid and funny, but, like, I don't know. A lot of people would be like, that rich guy is going to risk going to jail, so I don't have to pay taxes. Okay. You know, like there's probably a power to that. So I'll be curious to see, if that video is remembered in the next few episodes.
Yeah. And I think that like Willa's reaction of like, I don't know, I think it looks pretty good, is like meant to stand in for, you know, what the average American might be like. I don't know. I do really love, it's funny, 'cause like he's giving that speech to Shiv about like looking down on the elites. And I was like, looking down on the elites. And then she flags it. She's like, don't you think if you're looking down at the elites, that's indicative of something? And I was like, thanks, Shiv. Yes. He needs you on his team. Anyway. So Connor, I mean, he's in it to win it. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
I mean, it's such the American narrative right now that, like, of course, the idiot that everyone discounts is the one who actually is, you know, on their way to incredible power, you know? So I think you're probably onto something there.
Right. And I think the temptation to examine how a media family, a family that owns a Fox News analog, could influence the election through the media would be impossible for this show to ignore. There is, you know, we should say that Logan, you know, is interested in that video not going out because he says, you don't go shouting about tax, we have arrangements. And we know that, he has a close, relationship with, the president. They never name him. It doesn't seem to be Trump. They just call him, like, in season one, they called him, like, President Raisin, and they also refer to him being out in California. So I just think he's like a, I don't think it's supposed to be Trump. I think it's supposed to be something else, entirely. And like also how interesting that Connor, made his declaration on Instagram. I don't know. So it's, you know, it's a brave new world. Which brings us to, Greg, cousin Greg, who is on our regular Roy rankings, even if his last name, I think, is not Roy. Greg is up here only for, like, his amazing ability to survive what starts the episode as, like, a disastrous thing, right? He meets with this, there's a biographer played by the great Jessica Hecht, who youngsters may know as Susan from Friends. I always think of her from her role on The Single Guy, which was a short-lived NBC sitcom, but she's also, she's a great theater actress.
She's wonderful on the Netflix show Ryan O'Connell created, Special. Yes. She plays his mom.
She's great on that. She's amazing on Breaking Bad. She's just, like, when she shows up, she's one of those people where I'm just like, oh, hi. So here she is. She's playing a biographer who is writing a book that Logan does not want written about him. And we open with Greg meeting with her and not understanding what on the record, off the record background means, which was a great scene. It reminded me, I'm always looking for, like, what's the real world, analog here. And, you know, sometimes we're overreaching. Like, I might be overreaching with that Mark Zuckerberg video. Who knows? But, I thought of, there was that interview with, Kellyanne Conway and her husband. I want to say it was in the Times or maybe the Post, where Kellyanne Conway kept retroactively saying that's off the record, and they, like, wrote it because they're like, well, you can't say after the fact that's off the record. Right. So that's not how that works. So Greg got a crash course in how that works, but this should have been the end of Greg. This was, like, a huge blunder for him. Logan's on the warpath. He's set, I think, the character's named Ratfucker Sam, to figure out who has been talking to this biographer, and Greg, just by dint of, like, keeping his head down, makes another error, possibly asking Tom for help, because Tom's like, you just gave me a huge piece of info, buddy.
Why did you do that?
And then he's one of the boars on the floor and somehow, like, you know, gets out of that alive. Like, it's just his, Greg's remarkable resiliency, cockroach-like ability to survive, even the crazy situations, puts him smack in the middle of our countdown here.
Yeah, he got himself on the plane too, you know, like he's on the private jet with the top brass. Like, that's kind of, you know, impressive, even if he is, you know, a blood relative. But yeah, I thought that scene with him and Tom was so good. And, it's fun watching again with something that's not too cartoony. He's believably kind of clueless, but, watching him sort of slowly figure out the machinations and how this world works. It's a funny character, but I think there's something sort of sorrowful about it too.
Like a corruption of him?
Well, no, just like he's kind of an innocent. I mean, obviously he's done a couple underhanded things, but like, I don't know. I just think that like I just have this kind of idea of like, if he just like walked away now, he'd be fine.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And I really love that scene with Tom because he's like, can I trust you? And Tom's like, yeah, up to a point. And then immediately goes, never trust anyone, buddy. And I'm just like, that's a lesson. That's a lesson that he learned, right there. And then he thanks Tom, but like, what did Tom do? Just like not explicitly rat him out, I guess. But yeah, also I loved his line about like, I feel like a rich white, like, band or whatever. Like, I feel like you too, I think is what he says.
Yeah, that's good.
On the private jet. It's a good line. Anything else you want to say about Long Tall Greg, this week?
No, I think, you know, good on him for just kind of, I mean, it's hard for him to lay low because he's so tall, but, you know, he did a good job of getting out of the way, I would say.
All right. That brings us to number 6 on our Roy ranking list. That is, poor Tom, who has very, very tough week this week. Though he's down here on the power ranking. I want to put Matthew McFadden at like the top of my performance ranking because he just does, he has so many incredible scenes where he's like, he's so passive, but he's so trying and understands the game. Like he's so passive, but understands the game at the same time. So Shiv has asked him to, on her behalf, sort of, convince her father that going after Pierce is not the way to go. And Tom's like, this is career suicide for me. I don't want to be the one to do this. Like that's terrible. So you see him, this is maybe my favorite scene is him going up to Carl and trying to talk to Carl, convince Carl, that Carl should be the one to do it. And then Carl's like, oh, that's interesting. And brings Jerry over. And Jerry's like, yeah, we talked to Shiv. Shiv says you're doing it. And like, all, they're like, oh, that could be cool. Oh, I could do it. Sure. It's
it was
fine.
Such a,
it's no
it's such
deal.
A good scene.
It's so good.
We're like,
good.
Oh, well, I guess, I mean, should we do it? Maybe we should. But then again,
yeah,
you are family. You know, it's so funny. It's really, really good.
Yeah. And he was like, I think, yeah, that's what he says. He called me the cunt of Monte Cristo. And then Jerry's like, oh, but that's a compliment, you know, your family. It's close.
He was joshing, you know, that's, yeah.
Oh, so good. So yeah, so you see Tom, or like when Tom goes up to Logan and he's like, okay, well, I'm about to say a thing, but I don't mean the thing, but I'm about to say it, but like, just ignore it, but like, I'm about to say it. You're just like, and then of all the boars on the floor, like, he was my favorite. I don't know. It's just like, he's the key to the show for me for some reason, because like there's one thing to show. Well, as you were talking about at the beginning of this episode, there's like different modes of power, Kendall's mode, Roman's mode, blah, blah, blah. And Tom's, it's just so weird and hard to hold on to. Like the Midwestern nice coupled with the like sharky instincts and the haplessness combined with sort of the hits he does score, it's impossible to like put him in a box, and that's what makes him always so interesting for me to watch. So
yeah, I mean, you know, to back to the Survivor, you know, comparisons, it's like that's another strategy, is to be so incompetent that someone thinks that you are seemingly incompetent, so someone's like, well, I'll just bring them to the end because like there's no way they're winning, you know,
right?
And sometimes those people win. So I think that like there again is a power in the way that people underestimate him. And I think that what I really love about the character, is that he's the closest, the best example we have of what this radioactive, like, nuke family core does to someone who comes from the outside, you know?
Mm, yeah.
Like, obviously the Roy kids are steeped in all of this, and they all have their problems, and they're bad in various, you know, ways. But like, it's innate to them. It's they're inured to it.
Before we leave Tom, we of course have to talk about another interaction that he had with the wonderful Sid Peach at breakfast, where she says, "I'll eat your sausage, Tom."
So good. Because the whole episode, like, there is Jeannie Berlin in the background, and she didn't get to say much. And I was like, "Why? How dare you put Jeannie Berlin in the show? You know, in an episode, and have her just stand there?" And then it was like, oh, well, it was just for that one line.
It was
completely
worth it.
The wait was worth it.
There's another line that he has. I'm trying to see if I wrote it down, where he's talking about Hungary and he's like, Europe, vampire-y,
oh my God,
like,
so good.
Racist. Like, I forget everything that he says, but it's like, oh yeah, war-torn, spooky, vampire-y,
authoritarian,
vampire-y Europe.
It's so good.
So yeah, Tom towards the bottom, but Matthew McFadden, who plays Tom, at the top. All right. Number 7 on the Roy ranking, mm-hmm. the last of our like our core family members, is Roman, who made a huge tactical error. He thought he swung big. Basically, he had a loss last week, right? When Kendall sort of outmaneuvered him with Walter. And so he thought he would get one over this week by using his girlfriend's connections to Naomi Pierce, who's a member of the Pierce family, to try to sort of directly start soft offering, sort of float something. And it tremendously backfires. Basically, he reaches out and, you know, gets seemingly a rejection from her. And also it seems she then told her family, and the family then reached out through other channels and was like, hell no, we don't want this. And so it's a huge tactical error, and Kendall exposes him for it. And we see him at the end of the episode just like completely debased, infantilized. Jerry and Roman, my favorite power couple in the show, Jerry has to like button his shirt for him, you know, and tells him that like in order to impress his father, he might have to enroll in the management program, start at the bottom and go back up to the top. This is where we saw Greg at the beginning of season one, if that's any reference to you, the management program. Yeah, what do you think of our boy Roman in this episode?
Yeah, I mean, it was a big, obvious mistake. I was curious what the business was with the two cell phones, you know? Like, I thought maybe there was a sort of extra layer to the whole thing, and maybe there still is yet to come. But yeah, I'm just another interesting character where it's like, I don't always know what the show thinks he is or what Kieran Culkin thinks he is, which is fascinating. It really keeps you on your toes. Then we also had the thing brought up with the girlfriend about like how they don't have sex. And it's like, okay, so they're still kind of referencing that aspect of his personality that hasn't really gone explored. So, I remain curious to watch him kind of try to climb out of this.
Yeah. The thing I do appreciate about Roman is he is seemingly always on to Kendall. Like, he is so wary of Kendall, and he has every right to be. And so it's just very, very interesting. So yeah, we'll see.
And he's also, I mean, obviously there was some stuff in this episode, but like, he's a lot more honest than a lot of the other ones. You know, he does sort of come out and say what he's feeling, and he does sort of like almost like tell people what he's going to do. Not always, obviously, but like, I don't know. I feel like in all of his sort of, you know, calculation, he's one thing he isn't, he's not very secretive, I guess, which I guess is a virtue when looking, relatively speaking, when looking at these
people. He's also on the back foot here because, this decision to, you know, we decided to put like a wild card slot at the bottom of our ranking. This is just something we've put together, folks. You know, one non-member of the family and how they're doing. And this week belongs to Frank, the return of Frank, who was such a key figure in season one. And they have brought back into, the fold because his sort of erudite, manner is appealing to the Pierce family.
He's the one person that the people from that family liked about people at, you know, Waystar.
Right. They called him Bor Vidal and also Shakespeare Frank. and in order to sort of make good with him, Logan gave him a watch with a Tennyson quote on it that Frank immediately knew the, you know, completion of and stuff like that. So like, this is Frank's function, but this is a huge, blow to Roman. It's a reason why Roman is acting, I think, so erratically, because Frank was Kendall's close ally. And he and Roman never got along. Like in the first episode of season one, Logan fires Frank as a show to Roman that like, you know, Roman wants him gone because he and Frank have like bad history. So to bring Frank back in, Roman's like, no, this is bad for me in every way. So I think that's why he acts, desperately a bit in this episode. But we want Frank on here because like Frank comes in, is sort of Logan sucks up to him, then completely debases him. And then we get this scene at breakfast the next morning where Jerry's like, why, like after that, like, why are you coming back? You know? And he just says like a bunch of different things. You know, he's like, baby needs new shoes, like, you know, old habits or whatever. Like a bunch of cliches, just sort of like, I don't know.
I gotta hire a hitman to kill someone in Palermo.
Yeah. Like whatever it is. And then at the end of the episode, he delivers something. He, you know, the Pierce family is like, no, we don't want any of your business overtures. But then Frank through back channels gets, you know, an email from Rhea Durrell, who is, I think, their CEO. This is the character Holly Hunter's playing, who said, like, maybe I can help you out. Let's make a deal sort of thing. So we'll see where that goes. But that's Frank proving, immediately proving his worth, right? Scoring a win for the family after Roman fucked this other thing up. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And anything that, you know, paves the way for Holly Hunter to show up. I'm also.
Exactly. So that is our ranking. Frank is a rather pathetic figure in this episode, but he does end the episode with a win. Is there anything else we want to talk about, before we sign off this week?
I guess I did have a question about who was the person who they said, oh, this is the person who talked to the biographer and they just died.
Oh, Mo. So Mo is like an old family friend. So we start the episode, where,
he has like 1 to 2 weeks left to live or something.
Right. And he's like, remind me in 2 weeks or whatever.
But have we met that character before?
No, it's not a character we've seen, I think, from context, you know, just like an old family friend, right. I think. Okay. So, who is dead now. So
well, R.I.P. Mo.
R.I.P. Mo. I guess the last thing that I want to say before we go is just a shout out to Danny Houston, who's like, climbed on board as this season as the family banker. And just has some great lines like, I burned villages and overthrown governments on your behalf. You know, like just really bringing the like Game of Thrones-iness to all of this. So
he also said, I hate to be the party pooper, but I have poop.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Yeah. And then he all of a sudden looked like, oh my God, did I just say that? He like caught himself. It was really great.
It was pretty good. So, you know, shout out there. All right. So that is it for us, this week. Please do email us stillwatchingpod@gmail.com if you have any questions, comments, or concerns about Succession. Until next time, Richard, where can people find you?
I'm going to be roaming old vampire Europe. And actually, that's literally true. I'll be in Venice at the Venice Film Festival. So, excited about that. But yeah, I'll be tweeting at Art Rylaws and writing for VF.com. Joanna, where will you be before, until we, visit the Roys again?
I will be hyper decanting some Cabernet Sauvignon in my Vitamix.
I forgot about that. So crazy.
That's a real thing. You can look that up, guys. Or you can find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This or on VanityFair.com, and we will see you next time.
And if you are watching this video, either I'm dead or I'm in a very, very, very bad situation.
She said, oh my God, I can hear gunshots. I can hear men outside.
Where are they? What have they done to them? Are they dead? Are they not dead?
There is one suspect, her father, the Sheikh.
It's Madeline Barron from In the Dark. We've teamed up with our new colleague, Heidi Blake, at The New Yorker to try to answer a question about one of the richest men in the world, the ruler of Dubai.
Why do the women in Sheikh Mohammed's family keep trying to run away?
There's 5 policemen outside and 2 policewomen inside the house. So basically, I'm a hostage.
And he reminded me that Sheikh Mohammed can get me anywhere.
Because you're a rich and powerful person, you can effectively break any law you want in our country and get away with it.
The Runaway Princesses is available now. Follow In the Dark wherever you get your podcasts.